It is a good morning indeed, a good morning live from Atlanta, Georgia, on the second story of the College Football Hall of Fame. This is a special edition of the Rob Brown Show, presented by our friends at Ingles Supermarkets. They are the absolute best. We said, hey, we'd like to head over to Atlanta and do a little Southeastern Conference football preview show. And Ingles said, yeah, we'd like for you to do that. So they jumped on board. They said, here is what you need. Go have a ball. And we are now, thanks to our friends at Ingles, live from the College Football Hall of Fame here in Atlanta, Georgia, for the 2025 Southeastern Conference Media Days. As a matter of fact, I am looking down and to my left, about, we'll call it about 100 yards away, about a football field away. I am currently watching the boys, Peter Burns, Dari Noka, hosting a little SEC this morning. They are live and more well-lit than me. I mean, beautifully
you mean
lit.
Lighted, not for clarification.
Listen, I ain't lit yet. Okay. It's 7:01. 7 p.m., we might be a little lit. We'll find out. But no, they are lighted more beautifully than I.
So this is good news for you, though. I mean, the distance between you and them means we probably won't get introduced to SEC Karen if exists.
Yeah, they were smart in the setup here, because the upper level of the College Football Hall of Fame is like a big circle, and there's a bunch of exhibits upstairs, there's a bunch more downstairs. And they put all the radio podcasters upstairs, and then they put all the TV people downstairs over in this little room kind of between the rotunda entrance and the media room, the big media auditorium, I guess, here at the College Football Hall of Fame. So, like, the TV people got their kind of like their own little set off to the side down there, and then they put all the radio dudes upstairs. And it is hilarious because, well, first off, it's like I'm on one side. There's the other side over there. And then there's two wings off to the side of those where everybody is. And as you turn all four corners, you can tell that there's like one or two guys that are like the me of their hallway, right? Like, I just walked over during the break. I walked down to the far end because I was going down to the break room to get myself a little bottle of water. And as I turn the corner, speak of the devil, there's my guy Abe Gordon doing his show. And it turns out Abe Gordon is deceptively loud when he's doing his radio broadcast. I heard him before I was like 10 yards away from turning the corner onto his aisle. I heard my guy popping off. And so we were catching up during the break there. And I was saying, look, man, I got to get you down there. Like, he probably tomorrow between 9 and 10 o'clock, Abe's going to come down and sit with us for a segment or two and talk a little Georgia ball, talk a little SEC ball. And I said, I got to tell you, man, like, I'm relatively sure if we are going to get kicked out of this place, it's going to be when you and me are doing a show together. Because it is there's three or four dudes that it's like, well, we're going to find out if there's an SEC Karen, and it's going to be one of our faults. But they put us a long way away from the TV folks, which was smart. The right thing to do. Hey, you know what else is the right thing to do? Because it's 7:03 in the morning, and that's always when we do this. It's time for us to tell you the three most important sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this morning and start talking sports. We need to tell you about all of these things when we do this. It is indeed the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this morning and start talking sports. When you do, this is what you will be talking about. Let's dive right in with item number one. This isn't really a cop-out. It is absolutely one of the biggest three sports stories on the docket today. SEC Media Days underway live from Atlanta, Georgia. And that's where you can find, well, me for the next 4 days of our lives together. The College Football Hall of Fame is hosting the largest conference in college football. We will have every team that will be in focus at some point over the next 4 days, and we will be here live for all four of those days. We will be here covering the events. We'll be here talking about the expectations for the year. We'll get previews, prognostications. We will have interviews with players, with coaches, and with radio and television personalities from across the entire geographical footprint of the Southeastern Conference over the next few days. Of course, we will have the media who will vote for the order, projected order of conference finish. We will have the player of the year voting projections, not like handing out the award, because, you know, it's July 14th and we still do have like 49 days until we get there. But it is a big day. It is arguably definitively one of the two biggest media days in college football, with the Big Ten up in Indianapolis, Indiana being the other. But again, if you missed it, if you're just checking in, a special edition of the Rob Brown Show live with you all 4 days here at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia for SEC Media Days. Let's get to item number two. There we go. Listen, sometimes it's early in the morning. We forgot to plug the water cooler in. So we had to give it a second, catch up, get the
refrigerant. I had to kick it, okay? I had to kick it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. It's like sometimes you plug it, it takes a minute. I don't care if you don't think this is one of the top three items in sports. I do. The Club World Cup of FIFA handed out yesterday, and Chelsea demolished Paris Saint-Germain. And by the way, Lonzo, if you are kind enough to include the FIFA Club World Cup in the Sports Flash, I fully expect a Paris Saint-Germain from you. Can I get like a Paris Saint-Germain? Can I get?
I don't know if you're pronouncing it right. Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, close enough. I like it.
If I look at it, I probably could read it better. I did 4 years of French and like 3 days of college French.
I like it because I heard it on the radio called a number of times yesterday. Paris Saint-Germain, which it is not that.
Doesn't matter. Paris Saint-Germain.
You know what you do call Paris Saint-Germain? Second place in the FIFA Club World Cup as Chelsea knocked off Paris Saint-Germain 3-0 yesterday. Cole Palmer, an absolute stud yesterday. The attacking midfielder scored two, had a setup assist for João Pedro's third goal, an absolutely devastating display from the Blues in the revamped tournament's decider. It is the second time that they have won the FIFA World Cup, the first Club World Cup. The last dates all the way back to 2021, the last time that they'd run that. It was a different format. It led to the same result. Palmer was able to get goals early in the first half in both the 22nd and 30 minutes. Pedro scored his in the 43rd minute. Paris Saint-Germain was unable to find their own. There was a bit of a fisticuffs scuffle at the end of this matchup, players going after each other after the final whistle. Turned out that didn't change the score at all. Cole Palmer also won the Golden Ball as the tournament's best player, as Chelsea captured yet another moment of recognition for the club by winning the FIFA World Cup yesterday. I got to make sure I say that. Let's get to item number three. You know, this one was a tough one because there's a lot of places that I could have gone with this. The MLB draft took place yesterday. We may talk about that a little bit later on in the show. MLB draft, not quite like the same heat that the NFL draft and the NBA draft have. Number one, because they draft 713,000 players. Number two,
including guys out of high school. I mean,
including guys out of high school. And perhaps the most Atlanta Braves thing of this year, the kid that the Bravos took in the first round with their first round pick comes out of a school, this is not a joke, Lonzo, called Basic High School. So basic. Kid comes from a school named Basic High School. It's not like it is a school that is called a Basic High School. That's the name of the school. It's Basic High School. We'll talk a little, like, we'll dabble in this a little bit later in the show. Like, we'll touch on the Braves picks. But the reality is the overwhelming number of kids who were drafted yesterday, a huge swath of them are going to college. a huge swath of them are going to end up in minor league ball and never touch the show. There will be a handful of guys that do. I kind of view that the same way I view college football recruiting, which is it important? Yes. But I'm going to leave it to people who spend their entire life getting ready for and jumping and diving into this, because I ain't got the time, energy, and effort when I know that the, like 85% of the kids who get the draft are never going to the big show. But we'll break down a couple of Braves picks a little bit later in the show. That's not, however, what I'm using for item number three. I'm also not using Caitlin Clark in the Indiana Fever, riding a record second. Caitlin Clark has struggled since she came back from injury. It has been a slog. In fact, at one point, she went 2 of 25 from behind the arc. She had her worst three-point field goal shooting percentage of her career in any three-game span. The Fever got back on it. They got it done. I would go with Cooper Flagg. The Dallas Mavericks said, we've seen enough. He played 2 summer league games. Game number one went 5 of 21 for a 10-point performance. It did not go great, Bob. They trotted him out there for game number two. This time, 10 of 21, put up 31 with a few assists, a few steals, and a few blocks. And the Mavs said, we good. We don't want to risk an injury. We don't want the kid blowing out an ACL, blowing out an E, blowing out of this, blowing out of that. We're going to sit him down. So Cooper Flagg now shut down for the remainder of the NBA Summer League. But that's not where I'm going to go for item number three. Instead, for item number three, I'm going to take you to NASCAR. And I'm going to take you to NASCAR because it is a there's a very interesting scenario that is playing out right now. The boys in NASCAR spun not circles, but the boys in NASCAR also turned right yesterday when they went for another road course out in Sonoma, California. And for the third time in 3 road races, Shane Van Gisbergen was your victor. Won for the third time in 5 races, his second straight after we ran a road course in Chicago last week. The boys were warmed up. They got a little used to turning that steering wheel over to the right. Of course, they also got used to looking at the back of of Shane Van's Ginbergen, and they did it again yesterday. Shane, the New Zealander, got another checkered flag. Showed he is in a completely different class on road and street courses as his rivals led 97 of 110 laps to win from the pole yesterday. Great one. I need you to know. I think you'll appreciate this. I think you'll appreciate where my man Shane was yesterday. After he took the checkered, he went to the front of the grandstands, and he did the burnout. You know, you do a burnout. Of course, we did. If I got a checkered flag, I'd hit a burnout. He did the burnout, great one, and he burned out so hard that he popped the rear tires on the back of his car. Then his pit crew came out, put new tires on the back of the car so he could do another burnout on the way to victory lane.
That's an expensive burnout, but necessary.
My man said, victory burnout. Check. Oops, popped my tires. Called out the pit crew. The pit crew ran out to him with new tires, put new tires on the car so that he could do a second burnout on his way to victory lane.
Have you ever heard of that happening
that's
before?
My guy.
You ever heard of that?
Not,
me neither.
I mean, I can't say it hasn't happened, but I've never seen it happen that my man hit the burnout, popped the tires, put new tires on the car to then hit the burnout again to take himself over to victory lane. That is a level of petty victory that I aspire to. All right, that's the level of DGAF that I am trying to get to in my life. All 3 of Van Gisbergen's wins have been from the pole. That ties him with Jeff Gordon for a NASCAR record of 3 consecutive road course victories from the top starting spot, which Jeff Gordon did back between 98 and 99. He also joins Chris Bell, Denny Hamlin, and Kyle Larson as the only drivers with 3 wins this season. This one moved him into 3rd for playoff seating. Van Gisbergen was 33rd in the standings and had not yet qualified for the playoffs 5 weeks ago. With 2 road victories plus the one in Mexico City, Van Gisbergen jumps all the way up to 3rd and not only is qualified for the playoffs, but is qualified towards the top of the field. This is going to be interesting because, on one hand, all he's won is road courses. On the other hand, he's dominated the road courses. On one hand, there's only 1 road course in the playoffs, and it is the Roval at Charlotte. On the other hand, the Roval at Charlotte is a road course that also has a very long run around the entire oval before you get to the row in Roval, which means that you got to be well balanced. Here's the issue. Here's the debate. A lot of people have a problem with this. A lot of people are saying, wait a minute. Is this guy, who we know is not going to be competitive in a traditional NASCAR race, a traditional left-hand turns only kind of race, he's not, because he hasn't been. The only thing he has won is any time that we are on a road course. Is it right to give this guy a playoff spot in the field of 12 for the postseason when literally no one thinks he is going to be competitive in that? And we're going to have that debate a little bit later on in the show, a little bit later on in the week. But the focus, we are locked in on SEC football because the Rye Brown Show is live at the College Football Hall of Fame here in Atlanta, Georgia, the site of the 2025 Southeastern Conference Media Days. We're going to run to a break. When we come back here in just a minute, I have put together, because it is day one, we have yet to hear from Greg Sankey. That's at 9 a.m. We have yet to hear from Shane Beamer. That's around 10. We have yet to hear from any of the coaches and players. That's all happening later on in the day. So early in the morning this morning, what are we doing? Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking projections and prognostications. I've got to fill out a ballot later today. Projected order of finish for every team in the Southeastern Conference, and I'm looking to see, is anybody going to be able to take it to the Longhorns of Texas? I'm going to give you my ceilings and floors for every team in the conference, and we're going to see, do we like a Cinderella? Do we like a dark horse? Do we like a fan favorite? We're going to keep rolling with that as we roll on with the show. I am Rob Brown, the great Alonzo, back in the studio live from the College Football Hall of Fame, presented by our friends at Ingles. It's a special edition of the Rob Brown Show here on the Fan Upstate. It is the Rob Brown Show. It is the Fan Upstate live from SEC Media Days here in Atlanta, Georgia, at the College Football Hall of Fame, presented by our friends at Ingles Supermarkets. And we cannot tell you how grateful we are to Ingles for pulling this together and allowing us the opportunity to head over here and broadcast this event live for you. We got Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, coming up at 9 o'clock this morning. I am currently and actively working on making sure we have the feed from his conference, because I absolutely do want to bring you some of that press conference live. I want to make sure that we are able to give you some of the sound. We will also be pulling quotes and clips from everyone speaking, questions and answer periods, breakdowns, et cetera, over the next 4 days. And that, of course, it includes Shane Beamer, Lenora Sellers, and the rest of the traveling party from your South Carolina Gamecocks, all due to speak today. But we are talking about SEC preseason projections and prognostications. And I do want to say, I want yours. 844-326-3663, 844-FANFONE. That is the number to be a part of the program. The Hub City Spartanburger text line, you can text that number, 844-326-3663. We will read your text on the air. You can also call that number and be a part of the show. And I will ask the question, what are you looking forward to having answered this week? Is it a particular team, or is it a particular coach on the hot seat? Is it a particular player? What are you looking forward to hearing about? What do you specifically want answered from the SEC Media Days here in Atlanta and going into the 2025 college football season? 844-326-3663. We are going up and down your season preview projections and what I think, and you are welcome to disagree. In fact, I encourage it at 844-326-3663. We are looking for your win total, ceiling, and floor for every school in the SEC. I started off with the University of Alabama, and I gave you a little extended thoughts on the Crimson Tide, primarily because I absolutely think Alabama could theoretically be a contender this year, and I frankly think that they will. I mentioned a head coach. Lonzo says you don't want to be the guy that follows the guy. He is correct in doing so. Not just do you not want to be the guy that follows the guy, You don't want to be the guy that follows the GOAT, and that's Kalen DeBoer. But I think that Kalen DeBoer is an excellent head coach, and I think he will show that this year. Remember, guy came in. He took over a Nick Saban squad. He does not coach like Nick Saban. It is going to take some turnover time. Let's talk about the next team, as I put them in alphabetical order, and that is the Arkansas Razorbacks. They are plus 20,000. That is 200-1 to win the Southeastern Conference. I think Sam Pittman might be in trouble because this is a Razorback team that just a few years ago was expected to be up and coming. Felt like Sam Pittman had them trending upwards. Now, as Lee Corso would say, not so fast, my friend. I went through and I looked at Arkansas last night as I was sitting in the hotel room over in Buckhead, Atlanta, Georgia. I think 8-4 is the absolute best that this team can do, to be honest with you. I like to say that it will be better. I just don't seize it. I just don't seize it. No, I genuinely look at Arkansas. And there are some things that could boost them a little bit. Talen Green moving over and playing quarterback. If he is, as some Razorbacks think he will be, if he plays at Heisman levels, then maybe that'll bump them up a little bit. Is there a top-tier finish in play? I don't know. They get an easy start to the schedule with Alabama and A&M and then Arkansas State. But then they go to Ole Miss. Then they go to Memphis. Then they got Notre Dame coming to the house. Then they're at Tennessee. And then listen to the next six. Texas A&M, Auburn, Mississippi State. Fortunately, all three of those, after coming off at Memphis versus Notre Dame at Tennessee, the next three are at home. Texas A&M, Auburn, and Mississippi State. That's three interesting schools. Then they are at LSU, they are at Texas, and then back home for Missouri. If they get top-notch quarterback play, I think 8-4 is the ceiling. Realistically, I think this team is probably looking more like a 5-7 football team. They got multiple top 15 teams that they got to deal with during league play. The Razorbacks must entertain Group of Five contender Memphis on the road. They have got Notre Dame, last year's national runner-up in Fayetteville, September 27th. We talked about that. And then you've got those LSUs, those Tennessees, those second-tier SEC schools that are going to be in the mix. This is the reason I said that I very much think that Sam Pittman might be on the hot seat by the end of the year. It is that schedule, and it is the fact that without excellent quarterback play, I think it's going to be a step back. Let's keep it going. The Auburn Tigers are up next. I think Hugh Freeze is coming in this year on the hot seat. And listen, there's some thoughts that, some belief that. And I'll see, we'll talk with some folks about this a little bit later on in the week. But there are some thoughts that there are some health issues with Hugh Freeze. Some behind-the-scenes drama within Hugh Freeze. Here's the reality about that. Am I ever so humble yet frequently correct opinion? Can we take just a second to remember and recall why Hugh Freeze is at Auburn? Can we take just a minute to remember why Hugh Freeze was hireable for Auburn? The answer is because Hugh Freeze was running his program. I don't know, what adjective do you want to use here, Lonzo? You're talking about a guy who was using burner phones to call escorts and hookers and hook them up with fellow coaches and boosters and players. What's the adjective we want to use here? Shady? I feel like shady's not strong enough.
I thought brothel was, but maybe not.
Yeah.
That might be a little too strong. I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, I do want to thank Hugh Freeze because of Hugh Freeze, I've been able to say the word hookers on the radio more than the rest of my career combined. So, but that's why he was available. And yes, I know he went to a different destination. And yes, I know that he said he was super duper duper sorry, you guys. He promises that was nothing more than just a little lapse in judgment. He's a super really duper good guy. That's why he went to Liberty, right? To prove to everybody that he promises he's a very, very good Christian boy.
Come on, Al. Forgiveness and second chances.
Yeah, you know who loves to say that? People looking for their third chances.
So you don't believe that you can reform, that you can overcome whatever your addictions are and be a better person?
If Hugh Freeze wasn't actively lying right now, yes, I would believe that. If Hugh Freeze wasn't skipping out on recruiting trips and saying that he's having this stuff behind the scenes he's got to take care of, but you know what he's doing on the weekends? He's playing golf, and he's getting seen and taking pictures of him playing. Not like playing golf in, like, booster tournaments, which are a thing, or in you know, recruiting by playing golf with, like, a recruits that know him. He's just out there hacking it up on the weekend. He's just out there swinging the sticks a little bit. And don't get me wrong, weekend hacker. I get it. I love it. Do you know what the problem would have been if, when we were spending this entire week getting set up to come here to SEC Media Days, so if I'd have texted you yesterday and I said, hey, man, listen, we're in a little bit of trouble because I had to register for Media Days yesterday, but I missed it. And now we're not going to be able to get there in time tomorrow morning. And you said, why, Rob Brown? And I said, play golf. I decided to go play golf instead of doing my job. You would go, you did what now? You were playing golf instead of going over and doing your job and getting set up so that you know that the biggest event in this station's season gets pulled off? And I said, yeah, I was playing golf. What's the big deal? That would have been problematic, me thinks. So, respectfully, do I believe that people can change? Absolutely. Do I believe in second chances? Yes, I do. I also believe, as the great Maya Angelou once said, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. How many times did that guy lie to the face of recruits? Hey, you know, if you come here, we're going to celebrate your faith. We're going to celebrate family. It's squeaky clean down here. And also, by the way, don't mind the hookers. They're just here for the fun. Come on now, man. I got zero faith in Hugh Freeze. I got no, and by the way, it ain't just me. I have, and I mean this, and I'll ask around. I'll look around. I'll find out. We got plenty of Auburn folks here. I don't know anybody at Auburn that's on board with Hugh Freeze right now. Outside of the people probably signing the paycheck, I don't know anybody at Auburn who has signed off on Hugh Freeze right now. But let's talk football here for just a minute. We'll question the leadership of the program later on. I think the absolute best that the Auburn Tigers do this year is 8-4. I think that is the tippy-tippy top. I think that is the absolute best. The good news, if there is any, for those Auburn Tigres, is that the schedule's not off for Baylor, Ball State, South Alabama out of the gate. Then they're at Oklahoma, at Texas A&M. They come back for Georgia. Oklahoma, we're going to talk about them a little bit. I'm a little hot cold on the Boomer Sooners. Then you got at Texas A&M. They got to go face the Colt in the compound. Then you got the Georgia Bulldogs and Missouri, both of those at the crib, on the road at Arkansas. Back home for Kentucky at Vanderbilt, Mercer, and Alabama. This is one of the more team-friendly schedules in the Southeastern Conference, and I think that's good news. I think it is more about who they beat, not where they beat them. But I think 8-4 is probably about as optimistic as I can get. Realistically speaking, I think 5-7 is in the cards. Mizzou, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt, I expect Auburn to beat. You've lost it all of them at least once in the last few years. If you fall in the opener at Baylor, which I think is realistically a possibility on the road out in Texas, you lose to Baylor, and I think the fuse is lit on a keg of dynamite under the Auburn Tigers that may see them getting railroaded the rest of the way. 5-7's the prediction. There is a possibility of 4-8 if the wheels come off for Hugh Freeze and he just loses the program. We'll find out. When we come back, let's keep rolling through. We'll do the Florida Gators. We'll do the Georgia Bulldogs and the Kentucky Wildcats next, 8 o'clock hour. We'll run through the rest of the teams in the SEC. We'll get you set up to hear some of the words of one Commissioner Greg Sankey at 9 o'clock, and then we'll carry on through the rest of the afternoon as we are broadcasting live from Southeastern Conference Media Days at the College Football Hall of Fame here in Atlanta, Georgia. It's a special edition of the Rob Brown Show presented by our friends at Ingles here on the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show live from Southeastern Conference Media Days here in lovely Atlanta, Georgia at the College Football Hall of Fame. Thanks to our friends at Ingles Supermarkets. Love the prices, love the savings at our friends at Ingles. They are kind enough to sponsor this for us so we could come here and talk a little football with you and with the coaches and the players out of the rest of the SEC, and very, very happy to be able to do that. First and foremost, The Hub City Spartanburger text line is available for you. 844-326-3663. 844-FANFONE. Texter said, Rob Brown, could you do me a favor and ask PSG what the hell was that turd nugget they dropped yesterday? I do not think, I could be incorrect, but I do not think Paris Saint-Germain is going to be here at SEC Conference Media Days. And while Rob Brown is a big nethead, a big football guy as well as football guy, a big soccer guy over here, I'm going to go ahead and say we're probably going to have to save a lot of the PSG-Chelsea talk for Friday when we're back in the studio for Friday, when we're back to our regularly scheduled broadcasting because it's college football season in America as of right now, officially, this lovely Monday, July 14th. Of 2025. Now, let's get some stuff in here. We have been talking about our preseason projections and prognostications for the Southeastern Conference football season and going through the, I think, best and worst case for each team. We have done a few of the squads so far. We started with the University of Alabama. I think a 12-0 ceiling is the ceiling for the Crimson Tide. Do I think they are getting to 12-0? Probably not. I do think it is the absolute best they can do. I realistically think a 10-2 season is most likely. I think the worst that they can do is 8-4. I just think that they will out-talent a lot of people. The Arkansas Razorbacks, I think the best case they can get to is an 8-4 season. I realistically think Arkansas could be as bad as 3-9 this year. I do think Sam Pittman is one of the coaches that will be entering this season on the hot seat. We will keep an eye on that. I think the Auburn Tigers' best case scenario is 8-4. I don't think they're going to be able to do much better than that. I think the talent has fallen off a little bit, A, and B, I think Hugh Freeze has either lost or is in the process of losing the majority of the fan support on the Plains. And as we all know, in the NIL era, where collectives are still important, and we have a big collectives story we got to get to a little bit later on in the program, I think they are in trouble. I think this team could be as bad as 4-8 this year. Let's get to the next school on the roster. Let's get to the Mighty Gators of Florida. DJ Lagway steps in. He is hanging out there with Lenora Sellers in terms of Heisman Trophy betting value right now. DJ Lagway hopefully took a big step forward, at least if you are a Gator fan. However, Florida's got a slate this year. The Florida Gators this year have got a stack of teams waiting for them that I think makes this year a little bit more difficult than in some of the years. And it's not that they have any more difficult opponents than normal. It's just the way they step out. They got a couple of tune-up games. They are against Long Island University. The Fightin', I assume, Tony Sopranos. In week one, they will be at home against South Florida in week two. But after that, dig the next four. At LSU, national championship contender. At Miami, national championship contender. Versus Texas at the crib, national championship favorite. At Texas A&M, a favorite to make the playoffs. And then it doesn't let up. Then they got Mississippi State. They are back in Jacksonville, Florida at the Shut Up, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. It'll never die against the Gators. Then, against the Bulldogs. Then it's at Kentucky, at Ole Miss, back home for Tennessee, and they wrap it up in the swamp against the Seminoles of Florida State. This is an interesting slate. It's not just interesting in terms of the fact that they may genuinely have one of the most difficult schedules in football. It is also set up to be difficult. There may not be a team in the country with two rougher road games in September than at LSU and at Miami. And those two games for Florida are back-to-back on the road September 13th and then the 20th. And then 2 weeks later, they got Texas. That's rough. In November, Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee are three of the five. Here's the reality. the Florida Gators have on the schedule, assuming that DJ Lagway lives up to the expectations, the lofty expectations being placed on him by the national media. Assuming DJ Lagway lives up to those expectations, I think the Florida Gators, who are 22-1 to win the Southeastern Conference, I think they could be a 10-2 football team. But I think that's best case. Is 10-2 good enough to get you into the SEC championship this year? With a little help. You're going to have somebody knock off Texas. You're going to have somebody knock off Georgia. You could be one of the teams that knock off both of those two squads. But I think 10-2 is the roof. Here's a question mark. 10-2 is the roof, with the question mark being Mario Cristobal. It is not, Billy Napier. It is not so much about DJ Lagway and the players for me. I think that's an interesting conversation. But I think it's DJ Lagway. Scratch that. I can do this. I think it's Billy Napier. I think it's their head coach. When Billy Napier got hired, coming out of the Sun Belt, Fun Belt, there were a lot of expectations placed on him, as there are going to be any head coach that takes over down in Gainesville, Florida. But the Florida fans turned on him in 1 year. They weren't happy with the recruiting. They weren't happy with the performance in year one. In fact, there were a million question marks about, did we go down too low? There were names out there. There were names like Dan Lanning, who a lot of Florida fans wanted. There were names out there to be hired, and Florida said, no, we're going to go get a guy that had a ton of success at a lower level. And Florida fans weren't super thrilled about that. And so there's a lot of question marks about Billy Napier entering the year. If Billy Napier is able to get it done, this team could be 10-2, and this team could be fighting for an outside spot in the Southeastern Conference football championship game. There is also the possibility that this team hits its floor, and I do think that this team's floor is probably 6-6. I thought about saying 5-7, but I think 6-6 is a realistic worst-case scenario for this team. We talked about the tough September with two road games back-to-back with LSU and Miami. We talked about the November slate that includes Georgia at Kentucky, at Ole Miss, Tennessee, and then again Florida State at the end of the year. Got a lot of folks in Tallahassee telling me they think 8-4 might be a floor for the Noles this year. I think they might be a little excited, but they will be a better football team. Let's go down to the Georgia Bulldogs. They are one of the two favorites to win the conference. They are plus 310, just a hair better than 3-1 to win the conference this year. What is the floor and the ceiling for the Georgia Bulldogs this year? Best case, no questions asked. Why not Georgia to go 12-0? Why not Georgia to win the SEC? Last year's SEC champions, and I will tell you this, I'm actually really interested because as I have looked at this, it feels like very few people are actually picking Georgia. Now, I will not be shocked when the SEC media projections come out on Thursday. Once we have voted, once we have put it all together, I would not be shocked to see Georgia listed second and close to the Texas Longhorns as favorites to win this conference. I would also not be surprised to see them be a distant second. I do not think they will be any lower than that. Kirby Smart has started down the road of the why not us narrative. Kirby Smart has started down the path of selling his team on the you are the now under Bulldogs. You are now the doubted team. You are the team that nobody believes in. I think 12-0 is not just a realistic possibility for the Georgia Bulldogs. Honestly, there are three games on this schedule that scare me. I'm honestly, even though old Rocky Top can be a deadly destination for the Bulldogs of Georgia, I'm not super concerned about Georgia at Tennessee on September 13th. Let me tell you where the challenges lie. You're looking at September 27th when the Dogs take on Kalen DeBoer and the Crimson Tide. You are looking at 11-1, November 1st, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party when the Dogs and the Gators get together in Jacksonville, Florida. And you are looking at Texas. Now, that game still has a TBD next to it. Why? They may move it around a little bit. Because if this game is indeed potentially an SEC championship preview, potentially a national championship preview, that game could be the biggest game of the year in the regular season. Texas has got Ohio State right out of the gate. If Texas beats the Buckeyes in week one, all eyes shift to the third game in November for the Georgia Bulldogs when they take on the Longhorns. If the Dogs are undefeated at that point, I think you know your SEC championship game. If the Dogs are undefeated at that point, I might pick Georgia to upset Texas. Why? Because the question marks are not about Texas, they're about Arch Manning. And I think that they are fair. And how do you take down a first-year QB1 playing in the most high-pressure situation that he will face until he gets to the National Football League? Very simple. You throw every five-star defensive lineman at them. We have made the joke for a hot minute now that the Georgia Bulldogs are just a breeding ground for future Philadelphia Eagles defensive linemen and linebackers. It's not a joke. Look at Howie Roseman's defense in Philadelphia. It is full to the brim with Bulldogs, and I don't think this year is going to be any different. If Georgia puts together, and if they live up to the expectations across that defensive line, Arch Manning could be running for his life. And that's not to say he won't be successful in doing so. What I'm saying is he will not face pressure like he faces against those Dogs. The worst that this team can do, I think, is 9-3. The only time Georgia has lost three or more games during the regular season under Kirby Smart, his debut season back in 2016. If Gunnar Stockton is an abject failure, then I think that there are three losses on this schedule. I think Texas is one. I think Alabama is one. I think Florida is one. I could maybe, in fact, I'm going to drop it down one more. I'm going to say 8-4 is the floor, because if Gunnar Stockton is a failure, then Tennessee could be a victory, or I guess I should say an L for the Dogs as well. I think 8-4 is probably the floor for the Georgia Bulldogs, but I think this team will be either 11-1 or 12-0 and competing for an SEC title this year. Let's do one more, and here's why. Because we're going to have to sprint through the rest of the SEC in the 8 o'clock hour, because at 9 o'clock this morning, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, will take to the podium, take to the stage that is right behind me, and give his State of the Conference address. We are actually going to check in and listen in and out of that press conference when Greg Sankey takes to the microphone, coming up here in a little over an hour. So let's not Kentucky out. This team is 300-1 to win the conference. You know, I said earlier in the show that I thought that there were two SEC coaches that enter the season on the hot seat. Sam Pittman at Arkansas, Hugh Freeze at Auburn. I'm going to amend that. I'm going to say there's three, because I do think Mark Stoops is on that list. Why? Because I think the ceiling for Kentucky this year is 6-6. I do not think they can be better than bowl eligible, or at least not by much. They will need production from Zach Calzada, a Texas A&M and Incarnate Word transfer. You brought in a kid from Incarnate Word to start in the SEC. I'm not saying he can't do well. I'm not saying he won't do well. I'm saying I don't expect him to. You lose several players across your offense. You lost your top two wide outs. You lost, if I recall correctly, five of your best defensive starters. There are some league contests for the Kentucky Wildcats that could go in their favor. There's also a lot of games that could absolutely wreck this team. You got Ole Miss in week two. You're on the road at Willie B to take on the Gamecocks in week four. You're at Georgia the very following week. Then you got Texas, Tennessee, Auburn, and Florida right in the middle. I don't think you're doing better than 6-6. I think this team could legitimately be 3-9. It is one of the weakest rosters Mark Stoops has put together since his arrival. He lost his recruiting ace, Vince Marrow, to Louisville this offseason. They play seven, potentially eight top 25 opponents, and this team will likely be a 7 or more point underdog in every one of those games. It could get UGLY, and Stoops ain't got no alibi. This season could get ugly. Yeah, yeah, get ugly for Mark Stoops and the Kentucky Wildcats. I'm going to amend my statement from earlier in the show. I think that there are three SEC coaches on the hot seat. I think Hugh Freeze at the University of Auburn. I think Sam Pittman at the University of Arkansas. And I think Mark Stoops at the University of Kentucky. And I think this year could get real bad real quick for Mark Stoops. All right, folks, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. When we come back in the final hour of the show, we will run through the rest of the Southeastern Conference, my preseason projections and prognostications, both ceiling and floor for the rest of the teams, including your mighty Gamecocks of South Carolina. Then at 9 o'clock, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, will go live. We will check in on his press conference. Shane Beamer, shortly to follow, will bring you as much of his as we can live as well, as we are live here at SEC Media Days at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia, presented by our friends at Ingles. It's a very special edition of the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Now, you want to feel special? Then just sit back, relax, and enjoy the soothing sounds of Lonzo Sports Flash.
It's like a hug for your ears. Yeah, that was one. You caught me. Matt Olson has replaced Ronald Acuna Jr. in tonight's All-Star Game Home Run Derby. Acuna was pulled from the Derby as a precaution to protect him from injury after back tightness caused him to miss one game last week. The Derby kicks off at Truist Field tonight at 8 o'clock. Yannick Sinner claimed the gentleman's final at Wimbledon, defeating Carlos Alcaraz yesterday, 4-6, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. The pair played in the finals at Roland Garros 5 weeks ago, with Alcaraz claiming victory. It was Sinner's fourth consecutive major final, but the first at the All England Club. Another road course meant another NASCAR Cup win for Shane Van Gisbergen, who took the checkered at Sonoma yesterday, following road course wins at Mexico City and Chicago.